Hello, hello. What's up, Roman?
Well, can't complain too much.
But you probably have a reason to complain.
I can complain some, but I'm just saying, like, not a lot.
Yeah, well, can't complain today because today is a very special day on our podcast. We are joined by Adam Bradley and Mishko Hevery from the Quick Team and my teammates. What's up?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good. So happy you were able to join us. Unlike our friend Manu, who in the last minute kind of forgot that he has tickets to see the ballet.
Yes, that's something you can easily forget about.
That sounds suspicious.
It does.
I saw him on video, and he was all dressed up with a, auxiliary, not tux, but
Yeah, you had the bow tie and all.
no bow tie, but he did have a sports jacket, so he was looking good.
I can't
Okay,
envision
so we're gonna
that.
have to look for that picture and share it on Twitter afterwards. For sure. So we're here to kind of, well, just shoot the shit mostly, but I know I've been eating Roman's ear off with the quick talk even before I joined Builder. So I think like I'm gonna give him the reins and let him just start complaining and doing his thing.
So, I like for me the most interesting part. I think I just listened to like three different podcasts where Mishko you interviewed about Quick, and I felt like most of the conversation online and also on these like interviews was about like performance, right? Like performance and like how Quick is more performant than other frameworks. And like, for me, it's more like I would like to understand better, like what drew you guys or what was the motivation to, to really,
Build yet
okay,
another framework.
let me phrase this like in a different way. I feel like nowadays, like I work with a Remix at work. I'm a huge like Remix fanboy, although I was very skeptical at the beginning. And I feel like, things are like fast enough, And so I'm like interested in like let's say, I'm positive. Let's say I'm positive that Quick is like the fastest framework, the fastest like JavaScript framework. I'm like interested in like why that matters for, let's say like most businesses. We're not talking about like businesses with like a million, like millions of users. Like why that matters for like most businesses,
Yeah, so Google did a lot of kind of digging into it, and they presented a lot of numbers that basically show that the faster your website is, the more either sales or conversions or whatever you're going after you have. And that makes total sense, right? Like at some point when you visit a website and you're kind of like on a fence whether you want something out of it or not, like if it's slow enough, you're just like, you know what? I really don't need that information that much, whether it's purchase or what have you. And so I think this is generally true that as users, we want responsive website, right? Just we want to be able to do things fast because waiting for things is just annoying. And I think a lot of developers kind of deceive themselves that their site is fast enough because they are on the local network. They are, using their development machine. And they usually test these things before marketing gets their hands on and puts, tons of third-party scripts for analytics and HubSpot and, whatever else that you need to add to it. Like an average site has something like, I think, 20 different third-party scripts. It's pretty insane, right? And so when you do all of that, you'll discover that your site isn't as fast as you think it is. And, if you look at top 50 e-commerce websites, what you see is that, yeah, for the sites that actually should get the best possible scores because they're, e-commerce and there's like clear correlation with making more money, even they can't seem to get there, right? So something's amiss here. Like we keep saying that like it's fast enough or we're bragging about things being fast enough. But then like end user data shows otherwise, that we are not fast enough, right? And then Google's collecting lots of data, either it's a Core Web Vitals or HTTP archive now allows you to actually query this data across the whole of web. And the story is always the same, that the number of websites that actually have good Core Web Vitals score is surprisingly little, like it's in the teens kind of a thing. And I'm going to actually make a stronger statement is that for the websites that actually serve serious traffic where third-party scripts become a requirement, that number is even lower.
Agreed, 100%. Like for sure, if your website is faster, you'll get like more customers or like more conversion for sure. I don't think that's like even like a debate. The question is like, how much is like the difference, you know? Let's say like these like 10 websites, right? Let's say they do like a poor job. They're still like the 10 like most visited websites. I mean, people still like, for me, like I buy clothes from this like Israeli websites. It has to like terrible performance, terrible. And it's still like the place I go to buy
because
clothes.
It sells it cheaper, and that's why you like
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
no?
Because it's cheaper, and they get it to you for like the day after. I always think about the example of like GitHub, right? Like GitHub is like not a performant website by any standard. It's like very buggy. You know, it's like a lot of things could be like better in terms of performance, but it's still like one by, you know, a huge margin, right? I mean,
so what you're arguing for is that like people don't have a choice, and so they're suffering because like what else choice do you have?
I think I would like
to argue that like we should get to the world where you do have a choice, right? I think we're in the kind of a stalemate where everybody's website sucks because it all sucks. It's like the status quo and people are just accepted. But I think once few websites are able to, you know, raise above the rest and kind of clearly show that it is possible, I think that's going to start a kind of a good friendly war between sites as they are going to race to the top, right? I think the problem we are currently in is that everybody knows web should be faster. Everybody has tried. We all kind of collectively failed. And the numbers we have right now, which are not pretty numbers, are kind of the best we can do with the current technology, right?
Right.
And so,
but
yeah,
it's worth mentioning, Michio, that there have been strides by other frameworks and
yes, like, there have been.
They're going in the right direction, you know, on one.
Yes, there's absolutely going in the right direction. You know, I spent last few years before I joined Builder doing Angular with this thing called Ivy. And Ivy, by all accounts, is a much more performant rendering engine. And so I was expecting that, like, hey, you know, such better performing rendering engine will result in faster sites. And to my great disappointment, it made no difference. And it's at that point that I kind of learned a very strong lesson, I don't know what else to call it, which is that it is not about how fast you can execute the JavaScript. It's about not executing the JavaScript in the first place, right? And I think most of the world is still in this world where they assume, like, if we only figure out a better algorithm to execute something faster, we will be okay, completely missing the point that it's not about a faster algorithm. It's just about not doing stuff.
Wait, right? So you think, like, for example, all these new runtimes for JavaScript, like, so for example, Bun and Dino and whatnot, those are not good directions, and that is not going to be enough of an effect towards more performant apps?
You mixed a couple of things in there. First of all, I'm not saying it's not a good direction. Absolutely, you should try and make it better, right? I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that even if you improve these things, it's not going to have as big of an effect as you think, right? So we should definitely improve, should definitely go in a direction, but it's not going to have the you know, a doubling of marshalling performance by Bung, you know, because the bindings are now faster, is not going to have a doubling of performance of the site, right? It's probably going to have a pretty negligible performance improvement. We should still do it. It's still a good idea, but it's not going to necessarily result in doubling of the performance of the site, right? And so my argument here is that the only real way to do this is to just not ship this huge amount of JavaScript. But I want to make a point, which is, it's not about not shipping JavaScript, because that's unrealistic, right? Like, you need JavaScript. So I'm not in the crazy camp that basically says we should return to the good old days where there was no JavaScript. Like, that's just unrealistic. I think the point I'm trying to make is that we should design systems that doesn't require all of the JavaScript to be executed all at once on the startup. Instead, we should be in a world which is kind of more congruent with what the web is, which, you know, download things on the fly as you're using the application, keep downloading things and keep executing it and so on. You know, don't do it all upfront. The all upfront was the problem, not the fact that we have JavaScript, right? So the argument here for Qwik isn't that we want to get rid of JavaScript. It is that we want to design a system that doesn't require a huge amount of JavaScript to be present on the application startup. And by removing that requirement, you can still have lots of JavaScript on a page. It just will be showing up, you know, either later or when you interact, or, you know, not all at once is the key point over here.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm interested to hear, Adam, like, how did Mishko sell you on Qwik? Like, amongst you, maybe it's worth noting, like, you worked on Stencil, right? And what else, something else, and it's
Ionic.
In my mind, and Ionic, of course, sorry. Yes. And Mishko has worked on Angular and Angular 2. What is your take on this, and how did he convince you to kind of come on board and work on yet another framework? That's one. And two, what is your take on what Mishko said?
Yeah, it really did take a little bit of convincing at first, because I didn't really see the difference. Because I was definitely of the camp of just like, well, if we make it a bit faster, it's going to be better, right? And so, like, Mishko's was, I remember the first couple of demos he showed me of how this would work. It's like, yeah, that's just lazy loading, you know? And then it's like, everything's got lazy loading. And then, like, yeah, that's just, oh, but the render is still the same. So how's this going to be different? So it did take me a little bit to grasp, like, oh, well, we're not running it at all, you know? And I think that was the big difference. And I think that's, you know, I've said numerous times, like the old adage of, you know, the fastest database query is the one that you don't make, you know? And so when you think of it in that sense of like the fastest website, you know, is the one that doesn't have to do anything, you know, it just renders the page. And then you get to the next step of like, well, if it doesn't do anything, then how can you make it do anything? You know, right? So that's the-
It's
that's
like
the
functional thing. Programming. No side effects. Like, how can you do anything with no side effects?
Yeah, so great. We're building the static HTML page. Big deal. Like, I can also do that with Hugo or whatever. You know, you name the static site generator to do that. And so then that's where the big aha moment was. Is like, oh, well, we can just execute just like we can already render out what we need. It already can serialize the state. It already knows where it's at. And I think it was the description of the resumability. And I think it was even your VM description that you use a lot, Mishko, where, you know, it takes it, like it freezes its state and you move it over to the web page and then opens it or just continues from there. I think that was the big like aha. I'd be like, oh, okay, now I get it. It's like, we're not rebuilding the whole world, replaying it over and over again. We're rather just continuing from where the server left off. And that was the part that finally clicked with me of how it worked. I will say the first demos looks drastically different than what Qwik looks like today. But yeah, it definitely,
it was named differently. What was it? Right.
Cute, right?
It was cute. Yeah, it was named cute. And I have to give a lot of credit to Manu and Adam for like harping on this thing, like, no, this DX is not good enough. We got to do better. We got to do better. We got to do better. And I was like, I am doing it. We got to do better, but I had no idea how, right? So it was a lot of head banging of like, how do you get to a DX that people would accept?
Yeah, and I don't know how we'd be here without Manu's work in the Rust world and the optimizer of what we've gotten done there.
I'm interested how you decided to go with some, like with, you know, like JSX and like hooks inspired API. Like, why not, you know, try and like do the Svelte thing and sort of reimagine like templating, you know?
So, I mean, Angular kind of did, I mean, Svelte did the Angular thing, right? Like Angular was first and then Svelte came later.
Right.
And Angular definitely had its own templating system. The thing I learned from a templating system working in Angular is that it's a huge amount of work, like ridiculous amount of work, because it's not just making the templating system work. You now have to have two-link IDE support, formatting, highlighting, you know, and the list just goes on and on and on. And so it is a huge undertaking to create something like that. Originally, when I started, I really wanted Qwik, or back then it was called Qt, to do the least amount of work possible. Like, I really didn't want to invent anything. And so I actually even looked super deeply into, could I reuse React, Angular, or Lit, or any of the existing rendering systems for the UI and just do the magical part of reusability as a separate thing? Very quickly, I realized it's just not possible. You need to have reusability baked in from the very, very beginning. But I did want it to be pragmatic about just saying, like, let's figure out a way to do the least amount of work to get away with this, right? And JSX just naturally was a fit because, like, hey, the tooling's there. Everybody understands it. Everybody knows what it is. The formatters, the parsers, like, everything is just available.
And Stencil also uses JSX, right?
Yeah, it was kind of for the same reasons of, like, there is no standard templating syntax out there. It doesn't exist, you know, other than HTML. And so then, okay, then what's the most widely used? What is kind of the air quotes standard version? That would be JSX, you know? So, like, same thing, didn't want to reinvent tooling, you know, TypeScript would have no idea what this thing exists. So then we'd have to make a templating language or a service language to understand all that. So all for the same reasons, just going with JSX, which is actually, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's able to, you know, represent a tree of data. And so with that, you know, simple concept, it is able to port it to, you know, really any framework.
Y'all think that JSX should be baked into the language?
No. I don't even know where you'd start for that. I mean, like,
how about types? I'm trying to, you know, start.
I think types can be ignored.
So there's definitely ignoring types and actually baked into the type, to the framework. The browser should ignore types. Like, I think that's a good idea because then you can skip a step. But it should, I don't think it should be baked in because it would slow down the development of something like TypeScript, right? But more importantly, if you kind of think about it, the browser can't really do anything with the types. Yeah, the way JavaScript is designed, at best, the type is a suggestion that can be broken. And the browser just basically would not be able to do anything useful with that information. So, like, there is just no need for it.
I came up in PHP, so, like, runtime type checks are, like, a nightmare from my perspective. So it's definitely, like, not. Yeah, well, I was talking about the proposal, the, how they call it, types as comments proposal.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. I don't know where it stands right now, but I remember reading about that a couple months ago. I think it's cool. I mean, it's basically, yeah, it's okay to ignore these types.
Absolutely. So I'm interested, like, okay, let's say, like, we agree on performance is important. Like, most of us do it, like, badly. Like, we used to work at Fiverr, and immediately, like, Fiverr has, like, a terrible hydration problem. Like, if you go on Fiverr.com, it takes, like, a good, like, 5-6 seconds before, like, the site is interactive. So definitely, look, you know, let's say we agree, like, hydration is a problem, and that's great. What else is, like, you know, for me, I came up from, like, in PHP, you know, like, the whole, like, Rails philosophy, right? And I feel like now with Remix, they're sort of trying to take a lot of, like, cues from that, which is a breath of fresh air in the JavaScript ecosystem. But still, I feel like JavaScript frameworks at large are, like, not even trying to be like Rails, you know, not even trying to provide, like, this, you know, batteries included.
There are some attempts.
Experience.
There are some attempts.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
Like Keystone or Redwood, was it? Or, like, Meteor is still going. There's some.
Right.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, really, I think SvelteKit is kind of, in my opinion, the first one to do that mainstream, in a sense of, like, there's Svelte and then there's SvelteKit, you know, the meta framework. And really, if you look at, of, you know, how long SvelteKit's been around, and then what I think are a lot of innovations that it did, you know, Remix is largely based off that. I don't think they'd admit to that, but you can see a lot of it in there. And being that I've been working on Quick City, which again, like you got Quick the framework, and then the Quick City is the meta framework. I've been studying a lot of the different meta frameworks and how they work. And I don't think any innovations that we're building with Quick City is in the meta framework world. I mean, we're really doing file-based routing, how the params, how being able to handling Git posts and handling data is really the same as how any meta framework can do it. Really, the big innovation, in my opinion, is the fact that we're using Quick and the fact that we can build these pages that largely don't use any JavaScript in the end.
Well, we are doing some innovation. The big thing is we're trying to figure out how to get type-safe routing into the system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as of right now, usually when you do routes, it's just like type a string and hope for the best, right?
Good luck,
right? And good luck. Good. And of course, you have no idea what search parameters are required and what are not required, and, you know, what types you'll have to pass in, any of that stuff. So one of the things we're actually digging deep with the community is to improve that situation so that when you create a route and then later on you say like, oh, I need a new search parameter and it's not as required, or I'm renaming a route, immediately you'll see, you know, red squigglies all over your code base saying like, you forgot to rename this, or this you said was required and it's missing in this location. So that's one location. The other one is we would like to also bring the type safety for form, working with forms and submissions and all these parts as well, so that, you know, it's not just, you know, make a form, post it somewhere and hope for the best. And if you forget, you know, some field or et cetera, you have problems, but rather have it all holistically work together. So both server and the client agree on the type. And if you miss something somewhere, you know, the TypeScript can give you red squiggly and say like, hey, this doesn't look right. This is not the contract we agreed to.
So currently, like, the main way to make a mutation with Quick City is via a form tag, correct?
Not necessarily. You can do the classical fetch operation where you do a post, or you can do a post through a form. Both of them are reasonable. I think coming at it from like Remix land, you know, Remix really pushes hard on the form because they want to be progressively enhanced. And the argument I've always made is that, you know, progressive enhancement is nice because, hey, you know, it's better than nothing. So in that sense, it's an improvement, right? But users don't want progressively enhanced application. They want the real application just faster, right? And so while a progressive enhancement, in my opinion, is a nice side effect, it is not the thing to really chase after. Like, what you really want is just the full app, just faster.
I think users know, you know, with all the years that iOS has been kind of dominating the space and all that, and also Android is not so bad. They mostly use their phone, right? And native application UX wise is so smooth and everything is like happening and you get a feeling that something is happening. You get like indications for tapping or a little like jolt from the phone or just that. And I think a lot of people are just getting used to that sort of experience and expect it to be on the web like yesterday. And it's not as simple as that.
Yeah,
go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to say, like, you can have that, right? Experience on web. The problem is all of that experience, extra experience, is a huge amount of JavaScript that has to be present. And this is where the mental model breaks down. We took the mental model of building apps on a desktop where all the code is available, and then just moved it to the web and expected everything to work okay. And it doesn't because, well, all the code is not available. Like, things take time to download, right? And as of right now, the existing frameworks really don't have correct mental model or any primitives to kind of deal with lazy loading. Sure, they have lazy loading primitives, but they don't really, once you start digging into it, they don't really work the way you want them to work. Because, for example, if you lazy load a component, you realize like, oh, that's only useful if the component is currently not in the render tree. If the component is in the render tree, then that lazy loading doesn't help because the framework will eagerly go through the lazy loading and download the component, right? And so the amount of JavaScript is proportional to the complexity of the page you're currently on, and lazy loading doesn't help. Like, sure, lazy loading helps for components that are not currently visible or not currently in the render tree, but what is in the render tree is basically JavaScript that's present. And our argument in the Quick world is like, that's still too much JavaScript, especially because once you realize that most of JavaScript executes exactly once and then never again, this is where kind of the big aha moment comes in. It's like, if we can just not have to execute that code exactly once, we can just get rid of that problem, then the amount of code that's left behind would be a tiny fraction.
No, we should also point out the prefetching too. You know, we talk a lot about, a lot of when we talk about this is, you know, on demand, when you click something, you want to download it and run it, you know, it's immediately a seasoned web developer will say like, oh, there's going to be latency. It's going to have a, you know, 2 second response time. And in many cases, that's true. So that's, I do want to point out that like Qwik does handle this by doing prefetching. We do know ahead of time that these are the possible solutions or possible things that, that the user could click. And we start prefetching those ahead of time. So.
Yeah, the prefetching is actually an important point, which actually I was trying to simulate building a reasonable in a different framework. And I was trying to like, you know, show the audience like this is kind of how it works. And very quickly I realized like, oh gosh, I want to lazy load this component and I can't because the framework eagerly goes through it, or I want to make this interaction lazy so that I can put a lazy loaded boundary over here. But guess what? Who's going to do the prefetching, right? Like if I, in existing frameworks, go and lazy load a particular chunk, and let's say I can somehow actually properly lazy load it so the framework doesn't eagerly traverse it, then the problem becomes it's on me to figure out the lazy loading story so that it's not late, right? So that's the prefetching story so that when I click on it, it has a good interactivity. And existing frameworks are like, you know, not our problem. Whereas what's unique about Qwik is Qwik basically says, no, this is our problem. Like as a developer, you should worry about building your application. You should not have to worry about like how to download it, how to preload it, prefetch it, pre-execute it. You know, all these things should not be your responsibility.
This even includes doing it at the level of using real user data. So for example, like the Qwik doc site, you know, there's certain interactions that it's a very, very rare case that the user would ever click it or might not ever click it at all. And so we're collecting this information of saying like, these are the actual symbols, the actual files that the users are using. And so we can take that, you know, aggregate that data of saying like, when this page loads, they should probably download these three chunks because we know there's a good chance of them clicking it. These other 10, never a chance of them ever clicking it. So let's not even bother. So there's that whole thing too, where like, it's not just splitting apart the application into different chunks and then lazy loading, prefetching, guessing which ones we should download, but we can also have real user data of saying like, these are the chunks that you're going to need right away.
Right. And if you somehow could do it in an existing framework where you're like, oh, I'm going to put a lazy loaded boundary here. Great. And now it's on you to make sure that you prefetch it, right? Because if you don't, now the behavior is slow. And people always think like, oh, I just have to put a prefetch link inside of my head and I'll be okay. Turns out, as we discovered ourselves, browsers don't work the way you think they work. And prefetching is essentially just broken. So you need a much more complicated system than just a simple link tag to be allowing to get the code to the browser.
Yeah. And another big conceptual difference, I think, between Qwik and other frameworks is that all the other frameworks work as if they're one big application, right? It's all one huge render tree, all the code has to run for it to work. And then you can start adding in these lazy loaded boundaries. But the whole idea is like, you're creating one big chunk. And then now you have to start being clever. Like, well, actually we don't, this page can be a lazy loaded. This page can be lazy loaded. And so you're having to manually break apart that, which is very difficult when it comes down to how you want to ship this information, breaking it apart at that direction. Whereas what Qwik does is it immediately breaks everything apart into many, many more chunks. And then the decision is like, well, how should we group them together? And so having this completely opposite approach of how you know, have these different boundaries, it makes it much easier to take things that are split apart in a very fine grained manner and then put them together of how we think they're going to be used together. You know, for, so again, like let's say that there's two buttons, two on clicks on the web page. At the lowest level, those are actually two different chunks, two different symbols. But our system is going to see is like, oh, well, there's a good chance that they're going to be used together. Let's just put them into the same chunk. And so there's a lot of that happening.
So how do you define, a Qwik City app as like an SPA?
Ooh, this is a fun topic. Well, actually, usually my response is MPA or SPA, and their response is yes. Because, you know, normally the decision is like, is this going to be a blog? Is this more of a content-heavy site? That should probably be an MPA. Let's use Hugo or let's use 11T or something like that. Some sort of static site generator. And then the question is like, oh, is this a dashboard or is this an account page? You know, it has a sign-in form. And then that should be more of an SPA. But like with Qwik, really the decision doesn't really have to happen, especially at the beginning, but rather at the per click. You can decide like, actually, let's do a full page, you know, repage refresh here. Let's just use an href, which would be typed. Or if you want to continue to maintain the like the whole application state at that point and you want to keep it in SPA, well, then you just use a link component where it would do a traditional SPA. And so that's like kind of the benefits of Qwik. And because we have these very fine grained components, we can continue to make an SPA or MPA. And really it's no longer a problem. It's no longer a question of like, which one should we use? It's kind of like,
yeah,
it depends on the click. It depends on what you want to do with that.
So it's a hybrid, like a Remix, in the sense that like when you click a link, it sends out an AJAX request and gets like a JSON payload, and then the router client side does the swapping.
Yes, that's the link version, the SPA version.
Where does Remix keep its router? Isn't it on a server?
So Remix has like, you know, it's both, I guess. Like, I think it's the same thing. Initial load, you get like the full like HTML document, and then
yeah, but you don't ever move the router to the client, right? I think the trick with Qwik is that we usually have the router on a server, but with Link, the router can actually move to the client. Whereas I'm not an expert at Remix, but I believe with Remix, the router is permanently tied to the server.
It in the sense that, I mean, I'm not sure what you mean. It's like you define these routes. There is like a client side router that, you know, does the whole like push state, replace all that stuff, but it always makes requests to the server.
Because only server knows the information about like, if I navigate to foo, what components do I have to download, right? Only server can answer that question. So
I would imagine that goes to the you know, a map of regexes of the different routes that are possible. And then if it's valid, then it goes, tries to get that, you know, that page's data, what we call queue data.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the actual like template, but like the data part is definitely like it's server only. So I don't know if they like split. I think Remix's compiler sort of splits it up where they take all the templates and then you sort of can store it. I don't know how they do it both client side, but definitely like the loader functions, like the handlers, the HTTP handlers are definitely like only on the server. A lot of people get that confused. Like I've been doing onboarding here at the company that I work. You know, to people, and people are like very confused about what runs where, you know, in this like sort of isomorphic architecture. So they're like, so this is on this, you show them the console and like, you see the console is printed in the terminal. It's not in the browser. So it's definitely confusing, but I think conceptually it's the same mental model. So, you know, essentially if I get a, you know, technically, once your Qwik City app renders that HTML, you know, document, it stays the same document. It doesn't go to the server again to fetch another document.
The SPA version, right? Right.
That's awesome. So how about, what do you guys think about like the fresh approach? Or like, you know, the whole concept of like island architecture, you know, of like, you know, let's.
So what Astro you know is what? Doing is fresh and.
Let's say like hydration is like a huge problem. Let's like not even do hydration. Let's like fetch a fresh like HTML document on every route and then only ship like islands of interactivity. What do you think of that, you know, of that like approach?
I think it's a step in the right direction, right? But like, there's still, as a developer, you have to think like, where do I put the islands? Oh, now I have two separate islands. How do these islands talk to each other? How do I make sure that when I, you know, island A contains my button, which I click, and island B contains my shopping cart, which I need to update. Like, how do these islands talk to each other? How does island A wake up island B? And by wake up, I mean like, I can't just call a function, right? I have to like,
right,
do something to like download code, which may be asynchronous. Now I have to have a promise to wait, etc. So all of these kind of problems are not really addressed. They're basically left as a developer problem in this framework. What's unique about Qwik is that you know, Qwik essentially makes these islands everywhere for you without you even having to think about it. But even saying that Qwik just makes island everywhere, I think is missing the point, because islands fundamentally are not resumable, they're replayable. So if you had an application where each component would print out its name when, you know, when the rendering is happening, what you would see on a server is that on a server, it would say, you know, component 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right? And then on the client, you know, let's say you have two islands. Well, you know, at some point you interact with the island and island will say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? But the other island hasn't really to it. And at some point you interact with the other island says 5, 6, 7, 8, right? And so now everything just executed. What's interesting about Qwik is that on a server, it's going to be identical. You will have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, but on the client, it will just say nothing, right? When you re-render a particular component, that component will say like, you know, 8 or whatever the number happens to be, but only that component, the stuff around it, like has never re-ran, so to speak. And many times we don't even re-render the component. It signals, we know directly which DOM to update. And so you'll never even see the console on a client. And that's a whole different kind of level, right? So like these island architectures are definitely a step in the right direction, but they're a very crude approximation of what actually is happening in a resumable system such as Qwik.
Yeah, and I think some of the part that we're having to explain, you know, or is drastically different is the fact like, well, it didn't have to re-render that first time. It didn't have a mount because the mount happened at the server side and it did what it was supposed to do. It rendered what it was supposed to do. There's nothing more to happen. So then when people run their client-side version of it, it's like, well, how come it didn't console log here? It's like, well, exactly, it didn't, because it didn't have to run. It was already done, you know? And so that's the part that we're kind of having to, or is hard to explain, I guess.
Okay, I have two annoying questions that I want to ask you guys.
Ooh, we like those.
Yes, we like being annoying sometimes. And the first one would be, if I'm a junior developer, right? This is like, all of what we're talking about is like really high level technical stuff, right? And I'm concerned, like, what someone that's coming into the ecosystem and has all this range of choice, why should he choose Qwik?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One is that developers have been trying to build fast websites, and they're kind of failing at it, right? And so if you look at the more seasoned developers, they're like, we tried all these other technologies and it's constantly just slow things. And so performance is definitely one of it. But I think there is another point to be made, which is that, you know, when you compare the performance of the frameworks, I think a lot of times what happens in this conversation is like, oh, the comparison isn't fair because like we haven't had a chance to like optimize our stuff to be performant enough. And I think that's kind of the point, which is like, yes, but like Qwik developers didn't have to do anything, right? It's not like our sites are fast because we like have complicated set of rules that we apply to people and say like, hey, make sure you optimize your application in this way. It just naturally what happens. And I think one of the things that Mario likes to talk about is this idea that, you know, there is a path of least resistance through a framework in order to get to the destination. Mm-hmm. And in Qwik, the path of least resistance is also the path of the fastest startup performance. Whereas in other frameworks, it turns out like the path of least resistance is not the path to the fastest startup performance, right? Like the path of least resistance is a single big web application. Oh, you want performance? Well, figure out how to break your app into islands. That's extra work. That's just not out of the box. Oh, now you have to figure out how to lazy load these things. Now you have to figure out how to prepatch these things. Now you have to figure out like how to do inter-island communication, right? All of these things are extra things that you have to do in order to get your application performant. And the fundamental problem is that the path of least resistance and the path of performance are not the same thing.
Okay, right? That is a great setup for my follow-up questions. Which would you rather invest in? Performance or DX developer?
I think you want both, right? And that kind of the point here to be made is like, not only do you want DX and performance, which kind of is the UX, but you also want capabilities, right? You want to have a framework which doesn't constrain you into anything, and you can build whatever your imagination allows you to build. You want to have a framework that has a good developer experience.
Isn't that a little bit like different or similar to what like the React philosophy was at first? Like, all we do is handle UI. You take care of the rest.
Yeah, but there also is a problem, which is like React doesn't know anything about bundling. It doesn't know anything about lazy loading. It doesn't know anything about prefetching, et cetera. And the end result is, it is not React's problem. And then it's not the backend's problem either, because they're like, well, we do meta frameworky stuff, right? And then I'm like, well, whose problem is it? And the answer is, well, typically developer.
Sales.
And the problem is...
sales at the
best. Right. By the time the developer gets to it, there are very limited things the developer can do. Like, oh, I want to put a lazy loading frame location here. Well, yeah, but I'm a framework and I require a synchronous operation here. So you can't put a lazy loading boundary here, right? Oh, great. I would really like, you know, this thing over here. Great, but I'm a meta framework and I insist that you name your things in this particular way. I was like, great. Like all these choices of what I could have done, by the time the developer gets to it, have been removed. And at the end of the day, the developer is very constrained what they can do. And in practice, the answer is very little, right? And the result is kind of what we have today, which is a world full of large sites that do not perform. Right. Again, I'm not talking about a hello world site. I'm talking about an actual site that handles proper amount of traffic. And all of these sites have trouble performing.
Yeah, and I will say, like, to somewhat answer your question, or at least where I think we're at in this stage of development, is that Quick has kind of, we gotten to the point that we're really, really happy with his performance. That, you know, the hello world app to the extremely complicated dashboard app is going to have the same performance. And so we're happy with where we're at there, that I think now kind of our investments is into the DX and really into the DX of Quick City. So I think we're going to really double down there and make it so much easier to use and have better error messages and, you know, faster build times, things like that.
But not just to match existing DX, but like to go further, right? Like we're pushing the typed routing further. Let's say it's an innovation that is not common right now in the ecosystem.
There's something else that Manu just showed that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really sweet. And the community is so they're stepping up big time. It's so cool to see how much it's taken off, and the help with you guys and, you know, and Shai and everyone that's been helping out. We're seeing a huge assistance in making the DX a lot better, which is a lot of fun.
What is the scope? Like, what do you imagine is the scope of like Quick City in the sense of like, I don't know, should it have a mailer? Should it have like a cash driver? Like, what's the scope here? Should have like a, you know, like a query builder and ORM?
I think Roman is trying to hint at, when are you releasing V1? No? What has to be inside V1?
Yes, I think the what's going to make it into V1 would definitely be the type routing, forms and inputs, and server actions, which is kind of the remaining thing we were trying to get in. So I'm really happy with the lowest level stuff that's done. So like the on-get, you know, handling forms, handling requests, and then having that same setup work in any server. I mean, it can work in Express.js, it can work in Dino, it can work in Cloudflare, Netlify, you name it. It really doesn't matter what server it's on, but the developer has one way of, you know, a very simple, you know, request response handling. So having a thin layer on top of that, using like the server actions and having easy to do forms and submitting and the same thing, you know, it can work with progressive enhancement, which is kind of comes for free with how we have things, whether it's going to be using JavaScript or using an actual form post. It really is at our level, kind of the same thing. So yeah, I think that's kind of our V1, or I guess our beta, is to get that part completed. And yeah, that's kind of what we're focusing on right now.
Can I add something to Adam's list? Like everything Adam said, plus I want to talk about kind of like the high level mental model of like how we're looking at these problems. And basically our philosophy is that there are certain things that only a framework can do. Like, for example, if you want to have route types, the framework has to give you the information about types. It has to collect it, right? So it's very difficult or maybe even impossible for a third party to be able to add this particular feature. And so our philosophy is that the Quick City should really have just the absolute bare minimum, but the bare minimum of stuff that cannot be outsourced, right? It is not really possible for a third party piece of code to like decide, like, I'm going to do clever lazy loading. Like, yes, but it's not going to be a good experience, right? So there are parts that that Qwik and Qwik City must have, because otherwise we cannot deliver on the vision we have. And there are other things that we should let the community do, whether it's, as you pointed out, Mailer, or, you know, transitions or animations or what have you, right? The goal that we have here is to do the least amount of work possible, but really do the work that only we can do, right? That if the framework doesn't do it, it is basically impossible to retroactively add it after the fact.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I totally get what you're saying from, like, you know, like a practical perspective. I think it's the same argument for probably like Next.js, Remix, SvelteKit, of like, why should I try and rebuild like Prisma, right? It's like Prisma is already out there. All you need to do is like npm install, and we should focus on the things that are unique to the framework. But I don't know. I mean, to be honest, this is just my perspective. I really wish for that, you know, all in that integrated package. You know, I keep thinking in like Laravel, you can do in your controller, you can do like validations on your request. One of the validations you can have is like a unique validation, and you say like what table, and that type of thing you can't do by manually, you know, strapping together Qwik City, Zod, and Prisma. You know, it's like it's like very difficult to get that level of like productivity, that level of DX. And so I totally get like the practical idea here. But for me, I really, really wish, you know, somebody would try and get that, you know, Rails experience in JavaScript, you know?
Everybody's been trying.
I think we're approaching.
Yeah, I will say that it's like you almost don't want to mention it, but I do feel like a lot of inspiration from Rails itself, from kind of the whole RESTful CRUD operations, how it works. There's a lot of things in Rails I think they got right. There's a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of things that didn't go well. But I personally see a lot of inspiration in Rails and even Gecko Jekyll and Hugo and things like that. I think they, and even Django, I did a lot of Django development back in the day.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Adam, but did you just hear the guy behind Hugo or Jekyll, I don't remember which one, just released his own kind of version of web components, which are supposed to run on the server and the client?
Yeah, it's funny how the web components, the standard there's more frameworks than anything that has come from web components, and they're all proprietary. So it's not very standard when everyone has their own way of writing the web component.
Yeah.
And I say this even in Stencil. Stencil has the same problem where, you know, we were one of the first frameworks, probably the first framework that did SSG with web components, but there was a very proprietary way of doing it. And so you can mention that it uses custom elements under the hood, but you're still describing another framework, yet another framework.
Well, I see we're a bit short of time. And so maybe I want to take like this last few 5 minutes to ask you guys, what are you excited about, like in terms of tech? What do you see for the future of the web and just tech in general?
Anyone go first? Otherwise, I'll jump in.
I would just say definitely the AI machine learning stuff. I think. What's it called in VS Code that we use?
GitHub
Copilot.
Copilot. That continues to blow my mind. And there are certain things I type and then it auto completes like what you're about to type. It's like, how did you know that? Come on. Like that's pretty cool. You hit tab and like, there's a lot of that I'm excited about. And it's really because at that point it was just syntax that I didn't have to write, but I still did the thinking of like what it needed to do. So I still enjoy being able to come up with like the, what am I building decisions, but like the mundane, I didn't want to type those 100 characters. That's fun. That's kind of gets the part I'm excited about. And yeah.
How about mobile?
Copilot is pretty amazing.
Qwik.
Say again.
Well, it's cool to see that even Quick, right? Where we didn't program anything. We don't have any templates or syntax of this is how the Quick component works, but yet you still see Copilot just automatically know, like, oh, you're probably writing this Quick component like this.
Amazing. No, my follow-up question was a little bit unrelated. Was like, where do you see like mobile apps and Ionic style framework for Quick? Do you see that coming?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think what Ionic style apps is just a web app. It's just a web page that happens to run inside of your phone really well. And with things like Capacitor, which is, you know, another Ionic project that I helped create, where you can run these web pages inside of a iOS application or a Play Store application, it really doesn't matter. I don't see why you wouldn't want any framework that can be able to do that. And so Quick is just another one that you should be able to have, you know, high quality mobile applications. And because Ionic is built with in a generic sense, I mean, it could be compiled to Quick too, you know, even using Mitosis. I mean, because Mitosis is able to take Stencil components and convert those to different frameworks. And so that's even a possibility that could happen.
Yeah, you can definitely have like you can definitely have a capacitor, like a Quick capacitor app, probably even right now. I mean, you just need to
there's no reason it couldn't exist this second. The hard part is that it's the CSS that goes into it. You know, like the JSS is, or the JavaScript is the easy part. Like making it look good and perform well, that's all CSS.
That's actually like a good question to have. We didn't even like talk about styling. Maybe we don't have time for this, or maybe
we don't have time. High level afterward. Let's see how long it takes Mishko to answer the question because he has the hard stop.
All right.
I was only going to say that, like, I like a future where our apps essentially become streamable, right? That you don't have this world where you navigate to a site in order to install either a mobile or, you know, pay the cost of hydration or WPA or whatever. But instead, you just like navigate places and they just work instantly and they're interactive, et cetera. And it's kind of the promise of resumable systems, because they allow you to drastically reduce the amount of JavaScript that has to be executed on the client, right? I mean, the reasonability in itself is cool, like as a concept, but the reason why we're excited about it is because it allows you to not execute huge amount of JavaScript, right? And that's the trick to being fast. Just don't do work.
Yeah, and to one last point to that, I think Steve was the one that came up with the analogy that I've always loved, is it's the difference between streaming a movie or downloading a movie, right?
Right.
Like, you can still watch that movie just fine, but streaming, but you're only getting little chunks at a time. You'd be able to start it immediately versus downloading it. You have to wait however many minutes, hours to download the thing to your computer before you can start it.
I think it's a little That's bit awesome. More like torrents, like, which is chunks of data that are not necessarily a video, right? And you get them also for different peers and you can watch the movie. That is even like further. You were going to say, Roman.
No, I was just interested in like what's your like styling jam, you know? Are you like team Tailwind over here or the enemy?
My opinion changes daily, to be honest. The doc site, the Quick doc site is built with Tailwind. And at first I really liked it. And then over time I realized without thinking about it, I stopped using Tailwind to do a lot of the stuff. I think what I love about Tailwind is the structure stuff, that I can go in HTML and write some structure really quickly. I can do media queries really quickly in structure. But as far as the styling, the actual padding and colors, and that's still to be seen, in my opinion. I like traditional CSS when it comes to actual colors and fonts and all that.
And we also support vanilla extract, we should point out.
Yeah.
You like vanilla extract?
Yeah, I love it. Anything that doesn't require JavaScript, but the same solution, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think like vanilla extract, I kind of feel like it's meant for you to build like a box component and then have like a similar DX to Tailwind in that sense. But yeah, it's definitely cool.
All right, guys, I think we're just about ran out of time. So I'd like to take a thing and thank you guys for coming by. And I know it's not been easy with your crazy schedules. And thank you for this. Yeah, Roman, you want to say anything else?
No, I really appreciate it. It was a great conversation. And yeah, I'm excited to see what comes next for Quick.
Manu showing up is the next thing.
Yeah. But he'll be the celebrity guest. Well, thanks for having us. This is cool.
Thanks for having us.
Well, guys, thank you, guys. Thank you, and we'll catch you next time.